sifter.com.au.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter. On Lightmap, we have conversations and explore the culture and the making of games and interactive media. And you meet people who do that work from all around the world. My name is Gianni. Thank you so much for joining me. My guests on this episode of Lightmap are Andy Brophy and Olivia Haynes, two of the minds behind Knuckle Sandwich, a 2D RPG that feels like some of the best titles from the Game Boy Advance and Nintendo DS era. Hello to you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Cool, thanks for having us.
Hi.
Before we jump in and learn a little bit more about this game that's been worming its way through my brain for the last couple of days, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Walkthrough, which is Sifter's weekly news podcast.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 28th of April.
Embracer is dead. The company will split up into three parts as CEO eats crow after the capitalist implosion reaches a conclusion.
Escape from Tarkov players are up in arms as developers introduce a $250 pay-to-win mode.
Fortnite will let you block those sweaty emotes with strangers that were just a little bit too mean if you want to.
And Fallout 76 hits a massive player milestone after the launch of the TV series.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
Articles to read, podcasts to listen to, and videos to watch on sifter.com.au.
What is Knuckle Sandwich?
So it's a 2D RPG that has, I guess, WarioWare-style microgames mixed into the turn-based combat. And it's, yeah, it's a, like I said, it's an RPG. It's set on a fictional island off the southeast coast of Australia. Has a lot of monsters, a lot of goblins, a lot of cult kind of intrigue all weaved into the story.
Andy, can you take me all the way back to the very beginning? Because when we last spoke to you, you told us that this game actually has like its roots in a Flash game that you made a decade ago now. Let's go right back to the start.
Yeah, so back a decade ago, I was making a lot of small kind of games like with Game Maker, and I wanted to really branch out and just try different programs, that kind of things, just try different ways of making games. And so I feel I really, really late into the game got into making Flash games. And yeah, because I just wanted to be able to put games online, that kind of thing, the sort of small games I was making. And one of them back then was a game that was called Knuckle Sandwich and had very much the same sort of, I suppose, opening kind of premise where you work in a diner, very similar characters, that sort of thing. It was only a very brief game, maybe like 40 minutes, an hour long, something like that. I showed it at like a couple of festivals and that sort of thing, but never properly released it. It was just kind of something that I had in the back of my mind. Mostly because Flash was dying and I just, you know, moved on to other kind of projects. But it was only a couple of years later when I knew I wanted to make a bigger game that, you know, I looked through all my old projects that I abandoned and was like, you know, I think there's something here. I think this is the kind of aesthetic I want to go for, the kind of vibe. So I just expanded upon that over the years.
Tell me a little bit about that aesthetic and vibe, because it feels to me like, yeah, channeling my childhood when playing this game. Tell me about the influences and the look of Knuckle Sandwich.
Yeah, well, kind of like you touched on in the intro, very GBA inspired, very DS inspired. I obviously played those a lot as a kid. I think it's funny, I started making games when I was around like 12 or so, which was around the age I was when I was playing, you know, Game Boy Advance DS games. So I think as I, you know, obviously transitioned into making games, that was the cutoff point where, like, you know, before then I hadn't made them, I just played them. So I was like, you know what, I'm kind of stuck here. I think that's, to me, that was peak video games. I can just keep making games from that era and that's it. So I don't know, that was just what was most familiar to me, the kind of things that I liked. It just felt natural. I mean, and personally, like, I like 2D games more, so it wasn't really a question of, you know, making it a 3D game or anything. It was just, this is what I like. This is what I'm good at. So I stuck with that. It was only like, as I started working with Olivia, I was like, oh, I could probably add 3D now because Olivia's such a good 3D artist. Yeah. So that's how that got added in, I think.
Yeah. I've shown you the way. I've shown you 3D can be good, actually.
Yeah.
Olivia, do you have that same sort of grounding, the sort of games that you were playing? Is this the same world that you're in?
Well, yeah. I mean, I obviously, my games are primarily 3D, but I actually, you know, when it comes to games that I play, I much more gravitate towards sort of GBA era and DS era. It's like similar to Andy. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the games that I grew up with. I mean, like, my favorite console is the PlayStation 1. There's just like so many good games for it. And it's like, even today, like, even to this day, I'm like discovering new games for it that I'm just like falling in love with. And I think I draw a lot of inspiration from that aesthetic in my work, where it's like, it is a lot of the time 3D games, but they're very rudimentary and experimental. And so like the focus becomes more on like the heart behind it almost with some games rather than like technical fidelity. And I try and have that ethos, I guess, with my work.
It's really interesting because when I was looking at the 3D in this game and it started to see like there was an aesthetic of that DS era of 3D. Like it really had a look to it that I didn't really appreciate at the time as I was playing it, but the way that you kind of captured it really felt that way. Can you tell us a little bit about designing some of that look and how you kind of meshed the two elements between the 3D sort of kind of cutscene-y other little bits and pieces and the actual overworld 2D RPG game?
So I think even just when it comes to the 2D art, the game has such a varied art style. Obviously, the overworld and most of what you see and explore is very much this very bright, very, you know, harsh black outline, that kind of thing. But then when you get to the mini games, it's any kind of style. You know, we've got like realistic clay. We've got like, there's like an actual photo of like my arm, stuff like that. I think with the 3D, those scenes have a very different tone to the game. And so we wanted that to be very, like, it's very, I think, like, you know, we eventually worked to make it mesh a bit better, but it's still very jarring that, like, the first time you see 3D, it's just like, you know, the characters are elongated, you're in this big void of a space, you know.
I feel like I can speak a bit on that. Yeah. I feel like when we sort of started integrating 3D into Knuckles Sandwich, it was quite early in my sort of 3D practice as an artist, and I sort of initially was just really focused on like very low poly art. Like that was the style I worked on recreating. And I was specifically, I was really specifically referencing like Spyro the Dragon on like PlayStation 1, where things like the models are extremely low poly, but the textures are like where a lot of the detail comes from. And that's like a key part of the, you know, aesthetic for like Nintendo DS 3D games. Like if you look at like Super Mario 64 DS, it's that same kind of thing. Yeah. And I mean, that also just like worked with like Game Maker because it was limited in how many polygons you could have.
You were not meant to make 3D games in that program.
Yeah. So I feel like it's like the 3D sections are like a combination of our like aesthetics in a way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think we kind of like, yeah, we had these two different aesthetics and this is definitely like the middle of that Venn diagram. Where that meets.
Did you go back and research some of the games that you played at the time, or was it all about rather capturing the feeling of what it felt like to play those games?
Yeah, it's all vibes. I don't think I ever went back and was like, oh, how did this happen? Or like, I mean, actually, I think there's some stuff. So like, I mean, it's a bit further in the game. I guess it's kind of a spoiler, but there's like a very Tetris attack style, you know, like match the blocks kind of game there. And I was thinking so much like, how did they figure out the math to do this? How did they make them like, you know, check this way and this way and all that? Turns out they didn't. I just figured out how to make it better than back then because I just did it off memory. So no, we probably would have got the game done a lot quicker if I just went back and looked at the things I was ripping off. But
I mean, like we've looked back in the sense of, you know, over our time making the game together, we've shared each other's games from our childhood. Mm. Like Andy's shown me like all the games that really influenced his like Mischief Makers and Killer 7 and the No More Heroes games.
Yeah.
So like in that way, we've looked back. I think like maybe you could say that like you have gone back to those games, but like more with like a different lens.
Yeah. Like, it's not so much thinking like, oh, I liked this part, and so let's go like watch it again or something like that. I think. But yeah, no, definitely. I think like a lot of conversations were like, oh, this was really cool, that kind of thing. Because like, I was very much a Nintendo baby and like Olivia was a PlayStation baby. So like, I didn't grow up with like you know, the games Liv grew up with and vice versa. We had like not as much of a crossover when we were really young. So it was like finding out these things from each other, which was really cool, which helped influence things. Like I never played Final Fantasy VII until like 2 years ago, you know, because I didn't grow up with it. So Liv was like, you got to play it. Then I played it like over 2 weeks. It was great.
What was it like? Actually, I'm always curious about that game, which was such an important part of my growing up and played it for hours and hours and hours, whether or not if you come into it with fresh eyes, what that experience is like.
No, it blew me away. Honestly, it was like over Christmas break. So I was like alone at our place. Olivia was visiting family and I was like, I got to do something, you know? And so I played the game pretty much nonstop. And like, it gets to the final cutscene. I was just sitting there and I just felt like I'd been like, you know, like punched in the gut. I was just like, man, I get it. You know, like, if I was a kid and I played this like as it came out, like one, I wouldn't have appreciated it as much like as my adult brain, but two, like I would have been blown away. Like this would have been a totally different game. I would have been like, no, I'm making Final Fantasy VII too. That's what I would have done.
I'm really interested in, you know, talking about the micro games, because every time as I was playing it, something new appeared and I was really sort of surprised about how many different types of micro games have you got. Firstly, how many games have you got and what were some of the design intentions behind making this different model of interactions throughout the battles?
So I love RPGs. I played a lot of them growing up and everything. I think that's evident just in the game. But playing them now, like the battles are kind of just really boring a lot of the time. They can just be like, you know, just going through menus, just finding the best items, that kind of thing. I think not so much these days, but when it comes to like indie RPGs, they really just try and have like a bit more of a hook in some way. Like, you know, you see that in games like Undertale, et cetera, and the kind of games that came from then. So to me, it was about making the battles as interesting as possible. Like even if, you know, it's not as much about like, you know, a numbers game as RPGs. It's like, it's always meant to have that feeling of surprise. Like you see a new enemy, you're like, oh, I wonder what that guy does, right? Like, I wonder how this character's design would turn into a mini game. That kind of thing. So that was really kind of the intention behind it. It wasn't even strictly designed to be that way initially. It was just like I wanted every encounter, like I wanted people to want to see what every new character did. And so like naturally just doing this mini game kind of style for the game's design just sort of worked out that way. But yeah, as far as how many there are, there's like 120 something in the game. But then like each of them have like different difficulty settings, so depends on what we consider different games at that point.
What were your rules when designing them?
I was going to be really cringe and just be like, there were no rules. But I'm trying to think. As far as like rules, I guess I had kind of like some hard rules where like every character's got to have at least two that are unique to them. What was some other ones? That like they couldn't be too much longer than 15 seconds, I think was another one. Like I tried to shave off like, you know, like milliseconds of every interaction to make it like still feel readable and not just overwhelm people, but at the same time be like, no, just cut out any kind of like fluff. We don't need to like spend time here, you know, like even like you'll see things like it tells you the controls the first time, then every other time it's like, no, you get it. It's fine. Stuff like that. They had to be quick because they can really, really drag on. That was the thing. It has had to be like quick and readable. And if I could just make it funny in some way or like surprising, I think that was another thing I really focused on. You know, like a windscreen does something a bit silly or shows a fun piece of art or has a fun sound, something like that. Like it always had to just be entertaining without being too just random.
You've described this game as somewhat autobiographical, but more that you've been making it over such a long period of time, you can look back now and think of the moments where you were making particular chapters. I'm curious, you would be going through the game at the moment before people get their hands on it. What is it like to go back through that and revisit some of those moments?
It's really nice working on something for this long because I forget about some of the stuff I've made, and especially like a game that's focused on humor. I will see a cutscene that I've completely forgotten about and start laughing and be like, that was pretty good. Like I feel I see it fresh because I can't remember how much of this game I've made. But no, it's nice. You know, like I think so much about where I was in my life at the point that I made specific parts of it. And I can think about like, you know, things I was going through, what I was up to, that kind of thing. And especially we've shown the game at quite a few different events like PAXs and stuff like that. So I can think about like when I was making this part and I showed this part to people, like what they thought or like where we were at, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I played the other day. I had to play the prologue and chapter one, and like those were made like before like I knew Andy. Mm-hmm. And it was so, I had such a weird experience. I was like, this is a different guy.
Yeah.
Like literally just a different person made these. Like yeah. the sense of humor just feels different. Like I yeah. can't picture you as you are now, like making it. It was quite a bizarre feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah, which is really hard because I'm one of those people who's really like, I'm a perfectionist, right? Like I keep going over the start of the game and I'm like, I wouldn't make the start of this game this way now if I were to have like started it right now, right? Like, yeah, like completely different person. But you just have to let go sometimes with that sort of thing. Like, I think it does what it needs to do. And like, I can guarantee with people that like the game does get better as it goes along because I've gotten better at making games as I've made it, which is good. It doesn't like fall flat, which I think is really, mm-hmm. really nice. Always what you want to see. But yeah, I think to answer the question in short, it's really bizarre, but like a good bizarre, going back and seeing this stuff and playing through it.
You've made some of my favorite games, some of the things that I think are most interesting and exciting over the last, you know, decade or so. Olivia, your work is so distinctive, and you both together made Beyblades, which I played at, I think it was at a Hoverguard party, one Melbourne International Games Week. We just spent hours playing that game on a little arcade machine for that. Tell me what it's like working together, making games together. You've got your own thing, but you work together as well.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's really funny. Like we're both kind of workaholics. So yeah. every time we make a game together, we just come up with like the most ridiculous scope. And then it's like for like this extremely short amount of time, like a week, we're just working like 23-hour days.
Yeah, Beyblade, most of that was made on a plane. Like we're in Japan at the time and yeah, most of the game, because most of the game's the menu. So yeah. we made that.
I don't know why we keep making these games with like such a short amount of time and like these incredibly rich systems and yeah. like
just because we can
extremely
it's
large like list of art. Like Goblin TCG was like, that was mental. Like we made like 100 different cards or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many.
I think we ended up with 50 in total that we finished, but we did that in like yeah. 5 days, like all with their own unique art and everything. And I was just like, I just want to make a strategy game. Like that just sounds funny. Like I've never done this before.
I was like, this is not healthy, but it'll be funny to look back on, you know.
Yeah, we do it for the bit.
But I think, like, in all seriousness, like, we, like, in terms of the games we make, like, independently, our games are really different.
Yeah.
So it's, like, this interesting clash when we go to make something together where it's, like, our, the things we make are really different, but, like, we are very similar as people. We have, like, really similar taste.
Yeah.
And so I feel like sometimes there's, like, initially a bit of like it can be difficult for us to figure out exactly what we want to do originally, yeah. like for us to yeah get on the same yeah. page and get a scope that's like realistic.
We approach things the same way though, I think, but like just the different aspects that we focus on. Like typically, like I'll focus on the design of something that we make and then Liv will focus on the art. Like we'll cross over a little bit, like I'll do a bit of art here, Liv will come with an idea here, that kind of thing. But like I think we get such a clear idea in our head when we are on something that it's like, yeah, we just have to try and find the right like frequency so we're both matching it. And then like, yeah, we just don't really talk then. We're just like, all right, the game's done.
Well, yeah. Also, every game we've made together so far has been in Game Maker.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Andy's been using Game Maker for 2 decades. So there's like literally no point in me like touching any of the, you know, coding side of things because he can just like whip it up instantly.
I'm just like this so and then it's there.
I think next time we have to make like a game in Unity so it's like yeah. more balanced. Where it's like
we got to use something we both don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Because I don't know Unity.
We'll make an Unreal game next.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that'd be really funny.
Just flip the roles. Liv, yes. You just program it all and then
we
and
should do
all
the that.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do that. Let's like do a little side project after this.
Yeah, like defying gender roles. The woman does the code and
programming
the man
for
does
the boys.
Art.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's so bad.
You mentioned scope there because one of the most impressive things about following the crowdfunding campaign and everything you've been posting over the time has been your grid as you work your way through this process. Tell me about the grid, because it's kind of had a bit of a mystery to it, but it's always been intriguing to watch the little squares change color.
So I'm like a very visual person, right, with everything. Like when it comes to making a game, I don't like gray box. I don't use like squares or like placeholder art. The art that I put in when I first make something is like the art that's going to be in the final game, you know, maybe some revisions there or whatever. It's a horrible system, means I have to know exactly what I'm making. If I need to change it, I scrap all this art really bad. That's like the same sort of philosophy I have when it comes to like planning a game, right? Like I always knew about the chapter system, all that, but to me, I needed like a way, like I usually just have like a notepad and it's just got like a big list of things I have to do, like that kind of thing when it comes to tasks. But I needed like a visual way to kind of keep me motivated to know like how far is this, like a progress bar, right? But obviously you can't, like how do you calculate that? So to me, it was dividing it all by like the individual sections and how close each section is to being done. And obviously that's a grid, right? It's not accurate whatsoever. Like the amount of squares doesn't equal like a percentage or anything, even if you try. Like it's just not how games or anything really works. But it just looks so good to see it like fill up, right? Like everyone's like, oh my god, it's so close. And I started like making them GIFs so you could see the change between each one and everything, and everyone got so on board with it. I was like, yeah, it's the grid, obviously. If I like would talk about an update and people are like, where's the grid, you know, like I just want to see the grid. I don't know, something about it's just very infectious. Like I'm glad other people responded to it the same way I do. And yeah, like you said, it's a bit of a mystery to it as well. It's like, what does it mean when it's full? It's like, probably means the game's done. I don't know. I love that, like, I was so hyped about announcing the release date. I even forgot to post the grid at the end that everyone was like, I need to see the whole, like, a big blue square. And I forgot. So, yeah. And I posted eventually, just like a week later or whatever. It was fine.
It's just that drip-feed indie marketing. You know, it's all part of the plan, I'm sure. It's all exactly right. Livia, do you use grids?
Oh, I probably should.
No, you do. I made a grid.
Oh, yeah, but I'm not that good at using it.
I made like a surf club, sort of like a grid.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's internal for now, but there is a surf club grid floating around.
I'm very, like, I'm not good at organizing myself. Like, I will make, like, a really nice organization system, and then I'll forget to use it. Yeah. So that's something we're going to... like a personal journey I got to go on. It's like odyssey, figuring out how to organize my stuff. Nah. But yeah, we did that. I mean, yeah, we've done it like for a few surf club milestones. Like when I wanted to get the Steam page ready, like we did it for that.
And trailer that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, like now that Knuckle Sandwich is coming out, I'm basically going to go full time on surf club helping out. So I'll be like the grid specialist, just keeping us on track.
Yeah. There'll be some fresh grids coming for
yeah,
surf club.
Absolutely. Maybe we can get a public one going. We'll see how we go. Maybe.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yes, yeah. Please. I would love to see that. Yeah. But let's do it in one of your color schemes, Olivia. I think something of your aesthetic rather than that there.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about, I guess, yeah, surf club is another project. We spoke to you a few years ago now when you were had sort of started that. Where are you at with that game? You know, obviously you've got a game to release and that's obviously taking up most of your time, but I'm just curious how that project has progressed since the last time we spoke.
Yeah, you know, it's it is currently in hiatus because of Knuckle Sandwich, which is like, turns out it's really hard to like make two games at once. But you know, it's coming together. Like I think since we last talked, it's sort of got a bit more of an audience. And I think, you know, a lot of people, they'll show a game when it's like, you know, the art is like locked in and the, like all that stuff. But like, I've sort of been, as I've been making it, I've been showing bits and pieces here and there. And I think that's like something I just want to keep doing. Like, you know, I think that's sort of helped show that it's like, I'm just like a person making it, and I'm just sort of like going about my life and slowly working on this game. And like I think like I have like followers that are just sort of along for like the journey and are like just slowly becoming familiar with the world. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really been like in surf club mode recently, like because of Knuckle Sandwich. But like, yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there, yeah.
It's hard to make things. I'm surprised, you know, when anyone is actually able to finish any project, because it's one of the trickiest things anyone can do. And I'm really curious, you know, working on this big project for such a long time. I mean, 2017 or so is when you kind of started this phase of Knuckle Sandwich. We've had a lot go on in the last couple of years. How do you keep yourself motivated?
I honestly don't know. I just think I just kind of get up every day and work on it.
Yeah, I think think you're extremely like self-motivated, Andy.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, I just really wanted to be able to say I did it. I think like that's just what's driven me.
Like, yeah, I feel like you don't necessarily always need to look for something external to be motivated. Whereas like, I think that's like a problem I have, or like, maybe not a problem, but it's like, sometimes it's like, I have to really like, take the time to like picture what my goals are. Like I need to like write things out. Like this is where I want to be in like a year's time or something. Like I need to like manifest it in my mind. It's not like I just wake up and I'm like, all right, I'll get to the desk and start working.
Yeah. I feel like we have a bit of a, I guess like a routine when we kind of get up in the morning and work from home. Where, you know, we'd ask each other, like, what do you plan on working on today? What, like, what's, you know, what are you doing with the game exactly? Like, you know, with our individual games. And Liv will be telling me about, like, you know, I'm going to write this system. I'm going to, you know, do this art, etc. She's like, what are you going to do for Knuckle Sandwich? And I would always say, I'm just going to finish the game. and I'd been saying that for quite a long time. So I think Liv had to teach me to not to actually have a specific task, not just
because if you start every day just being like, all right, I'm gonna finish the game, then like every day you would end feeling bad because you're like, oh damn it, I didn't finish the game today, I didn't get my goal done.
Yeah, because we'd check in at the end, be like, oh, so did you complete your goals for the day? I'm like, nah, try again tomorrow.
Tell me a little bit about the team who worked on this game. Who was involved? And tell me a little bit about the music as well, because that's incredible.
Yeah, we have a huge soundtrack. I feel it's like 100 songs or something. So in no particular order, we have Lizzie, Nelwood, PNG Sequence, Brain Foam, and Barch and Plans Bomb. Huge group. It wasn't really specifically like meant to be like multiple artists back in the day. Like when I started, like that wasn't like always like something I intended. I'd originally started talking to Lizzie and Jim's back when I like first properly started making this a big game. And they like helped to make a few tracks, like the demo, that sort of thing. And then I don't know, I figured like with the game having such varied art style and being just kind of all over the place, it would kind of make sense to have multiple people do, you know, music like that to, you know, suit that sort of style, like visually. You know, like brought like Barch in, who I know who does like all the music for the 3D scenes, and they have this kind of really, I don't want to say like weird style, but like, you know, like it suits the like how off the 3D feels, like stuff like that.
Very ethereal,
yeah. So yeah, I don't know, a lot of stuff with this game I just kind of felt out, you know, like who I collaborated with, that kind of thing. I kind of feel like every musician knew each other in some way. Like I initially found Jim's and Lizzie through kind of like SoundCloud back in the day, and this other website called Battle of the Bits, which was kind of that sort of style of music that they make. And then yeah, they put me onto other people. They're like, oh, I know someone else who actually does similar sort of music that could fit this game's vibe. So yeah, that was kind of just the process of just finding people that, you know, or people I knew about who made cool stuff, and I was just like, yeah, I want that in this game.
How about contributions to the actual game design and game development? How much bigger is the team than the two people sitting in front of me at the moment?
Just us, really. Like there's other people we've collaborated with as far as like art and stuff like that. We worked with Joanna Tran, who did the 3D, like the human characters. She did those models. But yeah, as far as just like core team kind of, you know, chipping away at the game most days, it's just been us two, really. And then, yeah, we commission other people to add their stuff in.
What are you most proud of now that you've achieved your goal, your daily goal of finish the game?
Yeah, right. I finished my dailies. That's probably one thing. Yeah. I'm proud of, I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's really good. Like, I genuinely... Like, I don't even mean this in an arrogant way or anything, but, like, I genuinely believe it's one of the best games I've played. Yeah, I don't know. It's really funny. I think that's good. I think, I mean, I'd love to be proven wrong with this, but I think it's the first, like, Australian JRPG, like, very much, you know, like, to me, it's a very Melbourne game. I think I'm proud of that one. That's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, next time we're talking, Gianni, I can tell you like what I'm most proud of, because it's a spoiler in terms of what's actually in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not telling you. Wait. I'm not going to spoil it.
Well, I was trying to think, like, do I know what it is? But yeah.
No, it
isn't. I actually think I know what it is. Yeah. All right. We'll rain check on that one, the very specific one.
Definitely rain check on that one. Yeah. Well, anyone who's listening to this, play it, and then we'll come back and you can
I think I know the spoiler bit.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like you should be proud of the fact that you worked on a project for 10 years. Like, every time I mention that to someone, you know, Andy's been working on this game for 10 years. It's like, the sentiment is like, how do you work on something for that long by yourself? Like, that's like crazy.
Yeah, it is. I mean, yeah, I guess I said like I did it, but I mean, that's kind of like encompasses that sort of thought.
Like, you didn't get bored during the progress. You didn't like, Andy's not really been like a side project person either, where he's like, oh, I'm going to start working on this other thing so that I don't have to work on my main game. You've always just...
Oh, I don't know.
I'm guilty of that, but you've been very much like just the game.
We took that week out to make Beyblade. That was a pretty good side project.
Yeah, 5 years ago, you took a break from the game. Good on you.
Yeah. while we're on holiday in Japan, but you know, like whatever. I don't know. I guess there's no specific thing right now. Maybe I'll... I don't know. I kind of feel that's a thing where like, even though development on the game itself is done, it's only truly going to come alive next week. Like, you know, there's obviously people already following it, people who are really obsessed with the demo and all that, and they make fan art and they're really into the characters. Like, I've started noticing this new like phenomenon where it's like people like join like the game's Discord or have like a Twitter account or something, and their handle is like a reference to the game. Like, you know, it's like a character name or a location name or something. Like, I've seen people like use screenshots from the game as like an avatar, and I'm like, that's really cool. But I feel like, you know, an avatar, you can just change that later or something. Like, and you obviously can change your username, but like, that's still like, that's your identity online. That's how people know you as this character or something. I'm like, that's crazy, right? So like, I don't know. I feel like the game's really going to take a life beyond what I can currently comprehend from a week from now. So I don't know. Ask me next time and I'll probably have an answer.
That's so interesting, because I really think about like the first things that I was, when I first went online, a lot of what my identity was like, DBZ, whatever it was, usernames and things, right? And or FF7, a lot of like stuff like that. And it's curious that that's going to have a role in other people's like experience online. That must feel pretty cool.
It's cool. I like, like I said, I don't know how to necessarily comprehend it. Like, it's good. It's a positive, but it's like, like I think of that too. Like, I think about like the fan art I drew as a kid for like Pokemon or whatever, you know, and I'm like, people are doing that now, right? Like, that was a big influential RPG to me back in the day. Like, is this going to be an influential RPG to people like that are, you know, young now, like, and who may go on to make games or something? Like, that's a crazy thought, but it's very possible. I don't know. It's weird, dude. You know,
it's a really fascinating game. And again, you can really feel the Australian influence as you play through it. I mean, you know, you just have to look at some of the places that you visit and it feels like something that comes from here. Really fascinated to follow the process of making this game. And I'm really glad that the grid is all blue now and that people can play it. And we've had a lot of fun with it. I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for spending the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
We'll have you back on again very shortly, I'm sure. We'll do a spoiler cast about your favorite part, Olivia, and then people can experience the game. If you want to find out more about Knuckle Sandwich, you can head to knucklesandwich.biz. Find it on Steam. By the time you listen to this episode, it'll only be a couple of days before you can pick it up.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/Discord.
Sifter is produced by Fiona Bartholomaeus, Daniel Ang, Chris Button and Adam Christou. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and my name is Gianni DiGiovanni, and I'm Sifter's executive producer. Hey, the best thing you can do is share the show with people, because they might not have heard of Knuckle Sandwich, but you might want to tell your friend, here's a cool conversation with the people who made this game. And that's a really good thing you can do to support indie podcasts like us and indie game developers like Andy and Olivia. That's all the time we have for now. Until next time, have fun.
Hi, Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Unicorn Overlord might have a strange name, but don't dismiss its tactical prowess.
It uses a tactics mode, and which is similar to the Gambit system that was in Final Fantasy XII for your squad mates. And you can say, okay, well, you know, Hodrick, who's my legionnaire with the big shield, I want him to prioritize protecting the back row. They're going to take the most damage. If they take a physical hit, they're going to go down, but I need them to be protected. So you can get quite granular with this, and I reckon you could build some pretty wild builds that are totally game-breaking, but it's kind of the fun of the tactical squad-based gameplay in Unicorn Overlord.
Tune in to Drop Rate to find out why Unicorn Overlord might just be one of 2024's sleeper hits. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.